Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's rewind the tape on the Donna Adelson trial. Not all the way to the murder of Dan Markell, but to the moment the whole case cracked wide open. A folded piece of paper. And on a public sidewalk. You know? One extremely unbothered grandmother named Donna Adelson. This is the moment prosecutors call the bump. When an undercover agent dropped a flyer in Donna's lap, implying, in not so subtle terms, that someone out there knew about the hit. Now, you'd think an innocent woman might do something and anything besides calmly dialing her son, Charlie, 22 minutes later, like she was confirming brunch plans. But Donna didn't flinch. No panic, no confusion, no, Harvey, call our lawyer. Just straight to Charlie with a tone that said, we've rehearsed this. She didn't say that literally, but that's how it felt. In this segment, I'm joined by Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. And we dive straight into this moment, not just for what Donna did, but what she didn't do. Because in Robin's world, human behavior isn't just about actions. It's about deviations from the norm. And Donna, for her so-called smarts, didn't seem at all surprised to be handed a flyer accusing her of murder. That's not just suspicious. It's behavioral gold. We're going to unpack what law enforcement was really doing with this bump, what they hoped to trigger, what they were listening for on the wire, and what they got instead. Robin's going to walk us through how these tactics work inside investigations, why the reaction is often more important than the event itself, and how Donna's flatline and that response told investigators everything that they needed to know. We're also going to touch on one of the most damning post-bump facts in the case, the sudden stop in checks to Catherine McBona, the woman prosecutors say served as a go-between for Charlie and the hitman. Funny how that well dried up just minutes after Donna was nudged by an undercover agent. It's not a coincidence. It's called damage control. It's going to be setting the foundation for understanding Donna's mindset, not just what she might have known, but how she reacts when the walls start closing in. And spoiler alert, it's not with guilt or fear. It's with cold calculation. So let's start right there. The flyer, the phone call, and the eerie calm of a woman who should have been shocked, but clearly wasn't. Let's go to the conversation with Robin. What kind of red flags go off when someone receives a direct threat and responds like it's another Tuesday? Let's get into it.
Yeah, so when we're looking at human behavior, what we're always doing is we're looking at, as I've said so many times in my life now, that arc, you know, and we're looking at arcs. We're looking at what is normally this person doing every single day, every single moment. Because when we start seeing a deviation, that means something's changed. In other words, what we're doing is, it's interesting, we're actually administering our own polygraph exam the way that we're doing this. Because what polygraph exams do is they are measuring physiological responses to stimulus. And what they're doing is, so when an interviewer asks a question, they're looking at their machine to see if that questions got a response in their biology somehow. Did they stress? Did their breathing rate change? Did their respiration change? Did their perspiration change? All these things change. And so when we're looking at the way you and I do, we look at these behaviors, we are basically doing our own polygraph. Not a polygraph is like we're trying to detect deception, because what polygraphs do is they detect change. And so in this case, what we saw was when this thing is dropped on her lap and the conversation happens, the bump, and I've done bumps. These are fun, actually. because you're curious. You know, you do a bump because you're curious. I read the backstory. Again, I'm kind of digressing, I know.
Yeah, no, you're great.
I read the backstory about why they need to do this, because the lion wasn't getting a lot of action. And so when an over here isn't getting a lot of action, you're trying to make sure that the lion is good, that you were actually up on it. And also, is there anything going to be useful here? Because what happens, so here's the administrative backstory of it. Mm-hmm. If a lion isn't getting any action and you have to renew these things on a U.S. person like every 90 days or sometimes 60 days during investigations, which is a lot of paperwork, if you can substantiate to the judge how this intrusive technique is benefiting the case, then they have to shut it down. So they have to do something to generate something on this line in order to justify it staying up. Again, I don't know if this is the particulars of this, but that's in general. And so it's exciting to see what response are we going to get. And you're anticipating a response. But what also happens is if you don't get a response like you're anticipating, that's also very telling. And that's what we have here. So yes, she called her son, but let's look at her demeanor of like how she interacts with everyone every single day. Mm-hmm. That confidence, that seemingly control of her environment, non-emotionally crazy. And so that's what we saw here. The fact that she gets bumped and she gets interacted with by another human being that drops potentially a bombshell of information on your lap or has a conversation with you, this should trigger a physiological response of, oh my gosh, what's this? Change. Mm-hmm. But what we had was we had almost no effect. Mm-hmm. We had calling the sun, which is a data point, but her behavior when she called the son is what I'm looking at. Did she freak out? Was she exasperated? Or did she normally act like she normally does during the conversation, the dialogue, the tempo, all these different things with the interaction? And the fact that she maintained a pretty baseline of the way she's interacting says the information did not shock her.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, she knew. She knew there was no what flyer. Who could have done this? Is this something you're involved with, Charlie? Is this one of your friends on the playground? Oh, wait, you're 38 years old and I still pay your bills.
It should have been, in other words, well, here's what you should have had. You should have had confusion.
Yeah.
If she knew nothing,
there would have been, what is this about?
Right. It'd be confusion. Yeah. It would make no sense. So if you had zero knowledge of this information until this point, it would be confusing. I don't necessarily zero in on who she calls or doesn't call. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a data point for the entire investigation, because if she does have a closer relationship with her son, she's going to call her son. If she thinks her husband's a moron, again, these are data points we really don't know in this moment.
Yeah.
You know that this happened potentially. But again, I'm looking at her actual response to the information that should have been a shock to her. It should have been different than what she's aware of. And the fact that it wasn't that says that this information that's laid out to her was not surprising to her. So in other words, there's knowledge. And that's, I think, what they're testing.
What do you think they knew about Donna at the point of the bump? So prior to going into this, were they still trying to figure out how interconnected she was with this? And this was going to give them that next building block to confirm on the arc of her behavior? Was this, were they expecting the reaction that they got? Or were they still kind of iffy before all this took place on, you know, what does mom know about this?
Yeah, again, I don't know them from that standpoint, but what I'd be curious as if I was the investigator kind of coming in a little cold because I don't know what they knew at the time, but I would be looking at that. I'd be doing this because I'm really deeply curious. I'd have suspicions based on interviews and interactions and watching this whole family dynamic that she was involved in some way. Mm-hmm. And since so many people in that family seemed to be deferential in some way, or what I think is the greatest motivator she has here is she used fear as her motivator. people were fearful of going against her and rationalizing around she's just a compassionate, caring person. And as her daughter said on the stand, I don't believe you can care too much. That was an interesting statement by me, but we'll get back to that in a few minutes.
Go ahead.
But for Donna, it was, I think the investigative team was testing a theory about her knowledge of what was going on. And so it got validated.
Yeah. There are so many things with that bump that really, you know, are adding up here in court. One of the big things, one of the cause and effects here, bump happens. What happens or what stops, what changes immediately after? Well, those checks, those 44 checks she's already written to Catherine McBonough, the go-between Charlie and the hitman, those end as soon as that bump happens, because suddenly Donna has some awareness that maybe somebody on the outside is watching. That seems to be a pretty big tell as well, doesn't it?
Behavior change.
Yeah.
I mean, so again, you take an action to register and record what behavior changes take place, and then you try to understand what would cause that person to change that behavior. Mm-hmm. And so culpability, knowledge, all those things. You know, I think the greatest thing that's helping this case is the fact that she's an idiot. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, we've covered this, you know, whether it's a Koberger case where people kept saying, oh, he's so smart. No, he's an idiot too. People that tend to be criminals, you know, the whole notion of criminal mastermind really doesn't go hand in hand with very many people, because if they were masterminds, they wouldn't be criminals. And so she's one of them. And mm-hmm. she's so archaic in her thought process that I think she's watching like Bugs Bunny or something growing up and looking at how Bugs Bunny did something. And so if Bugs Bunny got away with it, so can I. I mean, it's because again, her methodology, and they even said it in the courtroom, you know, actually not a courtroom, Stacey, who's your other guest? Stacey, right?
Stacey, yeah.
Stacey was saying that she can imagine her butt dialing people by accident on her iPhone. She's mm-hmm. not smart enough to use an Android. I thought those were pretty funny.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I think she is just so rudimentary in her understanding of law and investigations from watching like MacGyver or something that she's just an idiot. And so people keep overthinking criminals. She is a complete moron, and she is running in her own mind a criminal enterprise to take down the son-in-law, thinking that she's the smartest person in the room. And mm-hmm. why? Because everyone in her family, her echo chamber, for all these years, to placate mom, have told her she's the smartest person in the room.
And that's an interesting thought experiment right there, that they think she's the smartest person in the room. Do they really think, or was it more, we're going to act like she's the smartest person in the room because the wrath of her, if we make her feel like she's not, is not worth going down that road. I mean, this is the woman who literally, I think Bugs Bunny is a great metaphor here, laundered money in a washing machine. She threw a Tide Pod in. I mean,
you can imagine the episode with Rocky and this cohort. You know, if I was this, you know, would I throw, you know, my friend Rocky in the oven, you know, and throw the match in the oven? And I mean, it just,
it's cartoonish. It really is. Like, you expect there's a big box of TNT next to the washing machine as well, and it's accidentally going to go up, and the Roadrunner mm-hmm. runs through Donna's house. Meet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then and she's sitting there with all the money burning around her and her face is black.
I know. I know it's my FBI scientific way of explaining things.
But it is. Great. But it is. It's so comical, the fact that she did this. And I'm, you know, Charlie even answered when Catherine called and said, why is the money in this bag wet and molding? Mom put it in the washing machine and stapled it together, too, of all things. It's just, okay, this is her thinking. This is literally Donna on her own, Charlie saying, you know, we got to launder the money. I need that money. And she thinks her next step is to put it in there with some scent beads and press spin cycle. And this is the best way to get the money, and then shows up with it as if this is... I mean, at first I'm like, does that show dementia? I don't think it does. I mean, this just shows how stupid she is.
Or she's hyper OCD.
Yeah.
And germaphobe. I mean, so again, I guessing at why people do things.
Yeah.
You know, it's challenging. It fits a fun narrative. There is no doubt.
But she pulled it from their safe.
Yeah, I know. Do I think that she did it because she didn't really understand the concept of money laundering? Yeah. Maybe. I mean, it's
it's. I mean, I almost
wonder. Outlandish, but I don't want to sound like an idiot if I agree. But at the same time, it fits. You know, from what I think about her as a human being.
So let's just take a beat and let all that settle. The bump, the call, the immediate freeze on the cash flow to Catherine McBonough. You don't need to be a behavioral expert or a federal agent to recognize how unnatural that response was, but it helps when someone like Robin Dree comes along and lays it out with clinical precision. This wasn't panic. This was pattern. Donna didn't react like someone caught off guard. She reacted like someone used to being in control of her family, her narrative, and apparently her alibis. Let's not breeze past what Robin pointed out. When a person's behavior doesn't deviate in the face of a threat, it's not a tell. That's your alarm bell, especially someone like Donna, who by all accounts lives her life choreographing. There we go. I can speak today. Choreographing. I knew it sounded wrong to me. Choreographing everyone else's. A normal person gets bumped with a flyer implying the orchestrator to murder. That's going to be a spiral turn right there. They flinch. They freak out. But not Donna. Donna keeps her tempo, makes a call to the one person who just so happens to be aligned with her, and acts like she's asking him to pick up dry cleaning. This is where things start to fracture. You don't just see suspicion. You see control unraveling. The bump didn't just test Donna's reaction. It exposed her operating system. For years, she'd been the matriarch. She was the one calling the shots, the person whose manipulation was masked as caring too much. But in a single moment, with a simple piece of paper, in one recorded call, law enforcement had a window into how orchestrated this might have been. More importantly, how unsurprised she was to be nudged. And Robin touched on something I don't want you to miss. The real power of these psychological probes isn't in the stunt. It's in what it reveals. Donna didn't call her lawyer. She didn't call Harvey. She didn't even ask, "Huh?" And 22 minutes later, those payments stop. Boom, the end of the transaction chain. Now, if you're on a jury and you're paying attention, that's not a coincidence. That's cause and effect. That's behavior. So this first act isn't just a smoking gun. It's a silent scream from someone who thought she'd never be questioned, and now she is in the courtroom on wiretaps in her own family. Coming up in our next piece of the conversation with Robin, we're going to move past the bump and into something far deeper. Donna's influence over her family, the psychological chokehold she seemed to have on Charlie, Wendy, and even Harvey. It's one thing to orchestrate a crime. It's another to emotionally program the people around you to believe it's all for their own good. We're going to talk about what happens when loyalty turns into fear and family becomes collateral. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that conversation right here. If you're not on our YouTube channel already, be sure to just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi wherever you are on YouTube. And you can make that search wherever you get podcasts as well, so you don't miss any of our conversations on this case and the many that we're covering for you right here. And do let me know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Really curious about that. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.